Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
This is John Cass of the Chicago Tribune. I'm glad you're here listening to the Chicago Way, Radio Free Chicago, in podcast form, and there's a lot to talk about. But first, I have to tell you something. I'm not very happy. Not like last week when I was alone. I'm really not happy. Why? I ruined Valentine's Day. Yeah, I missed her not too happy about it. Betty cried, yeah, and then she kind of forgave me with that bright smile, you know, the don't worry about it, honey, smile, and that made it even worse. The whole evening was ruined, so when you ruin Valentine's Day, Mr. Not Too Happy will explain. I just hope she's not listening to that part. First, though, introductions and salutations. The guy behind the glass is Jeff Garlin, the brilliant master of sound, producer of the Rokon Show and WGN Radio, and a veritable artist when it comes to baking pies. He's also the evil genius who came up with this podcast idea. Also joining us is Will Lee, a.k.a. Old School, Tribune reporter and columnist, and later on, former Cook County and federal prosecutor Bob Mylon, with a plan that might just stop the killing in Chicago and save lives. You happy, Will?
I am doing fantastic.
Pardon me?
It's the weather. That's what it
is. I've never seen you. That's the happiest you've ever been in the life I've known you. Usually you're like gloomy, man. Gloomy
Gus. Turning over a new leaf. New leaf.
Really? He must be in love. You're happy, Jeff Garlin?
Not happy. I don't know. I mean, sure. I'm content, I guess, at the moment.
Content, huh? Okay. How content can a man be when he ruins Valentine's Day?
Not very. What'd you do? Or not do?
What indeed?
Okay. I took her, I got her the yellow roses. Yellow, that's what she loves every year, a dozen yellow roses.
And when John says her, the lovely Betty.
The lovely Betty. My wife. Mm-hmm. That's the only her in my life. A card with, like, Casso, like, you know, writery stuff that I'm not going to tell you about because it's private?
Sure.
Yes. But Sonnets. Very poignant. I don't even start fishing because I'm not saying. Dinner? Yes. Then she wanted to go to a movie. Mm-hmm. And she says, can we see La La Land?
Of course.
Right?
Of course, dancers.
And dancers. Of course, dancers. She's a dancer? Dancers.
I think I know what
it, what did I say, no. Willie?
You said, of course. Whatever you want, whatever your heart desires.
I said, I will blow my head off rather than see insipid, smirking Ryan Gosling doing his bleeping Ryan Gosling dancing with that little smirk on his Ryan Gosling
face.
But
he's so dreamy.
Shut up, Ryan Gosling. All he does is play. He's like like for those who aren't Italian, he's the De Niro of actors. He plays himself in every role.
Right.
Can't he do something else? You know? Anyway. I say, no way. Now she's like, honey, please. I'm like, no, I can't. I can't. I can't. I already told people on the Chicago Way I'd never see it. If anybody sees me. No, I just lied about that. I just said, no, I'm not seeing it. But look, why don't we go to another movie, honey? So we couldn't go to Rogue One because we've already seen that. Plus, it's not Valentine's-y enough.
Yeah. I'd say not.
And I thought, I heard about a love story, you know, like a tearjerker love story. Did you ever hear about this one? It's called Manchester by the Sea.
Oh. Yes.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, but it's Richard Roper said it was very good, but it was, you know, very sappy.
Richard Roper said it was sappy?
Well, not sappy. It was emotional.
It's very emotional and very depressing.
Yeah.
It's like watching, like, the Deer Hunter and the outtakes from the Deer Hunter where everyone cried and they couldn't act.
Oh.
Okay. It was so depressing that after it was over, Betty is crying and says, Happy Valentine's Day, honey. I'm such a jerk.
Good job.
I told Bob Mylan about this. He's coming in. Mm. And he said, you took your wife to Manchester by the Sea. Isn't that bleeping stupid? And I said, yeah, it's bleeping stupid, all right.
See?
And you know what makes it worse, Will? You know her. Jeff knows her. She's all nice about it. I mean, like, if she were mad about it, like, you son of a bitch, why'd you take me to this stupid movie? And we should have seen Notting Hill. We could have made something at home, right?
Right.
So I'm not happy.
You should be happy. You know,
I ruined Valentine's. How was that happy?
Because you had a good woman who will forgive you pretty much anything, you know, and she can just turn the other cheek and says, well, it's a good movie. It's just, you know, rips my heart out. So thank you for that, honey.
It was a good movie. Right. But the ending sucks. I'm not saying what it is.
Spoiler
and
alert.
After the ending, you're going to be like, what? But I do have some happy news.
Oh, good.
This will excite Will. IMBD, which I don't know what it stands for, but Will knows.
Internet Movie Database.
Ding.
And he is the guy who got me into IMBD because he loves Game of Thrones stuff and he is always going through it. Well, they have the announcement the other day that Peter Dinklage, the dwarf or little person who plays the dwarf on Game of Thrones, is going to play, no typecasting here, in, quote, The Dwarf, unquote, by Per Lagerkvist. That's the great movie about Renaissance Italy in which there's like a lot of intrigue, backstabbing, unctuous clerks and courtiers and more revenge and more stupidity and anger and hate.
So not a stretch at all for him.
So it's like a happy movie.
Right. Sounds like In Bruges.
Oh, In Bruges, but even more so, because I'll tell you how in The Dwarf begins. I read this in college, and I bought the book, and here's how it begins. I am 26 inches tall, shapely and well-proportioned. My head perhaps a trifle too large. My hair is not black like the others, but reddish, very stiff and thick, drawn back from the temples, and the broad but not especially lofty brow. My face is beardless, but otherwise just like that of other men. My eyebrows meet. My bodily strength is considerable, particularly if I am annoyed. When the wrestling match was arranged between myself and Jehoshaphat, I forced him onto his back after 20 minutes and strangled him. And since then, I have been the only dwarf at this court.
That's pretty good.
Huh? Wouldn't you want to see that?
Well, see, also, I want to note...
Evil Peter Dinklage with a Niccolo Machiavelli, like, master?
I want to note what a nerd that John can be, you know, like, he not only...
Nerdgasm alert.
You know, you see how excited his eyes lit up when he said it, just like when he was probably reading Game of Thrones. He's such a nerd, everyone.
I don't read Game of Thrones, Will.
Christine reads them. She's read them a couple times.
I listen to Game of Thrones.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Who does the narration?
Some English guy with an English accent. He ruins a lot of it because now that I've seen it, and then I'm hearing his translate, like, he does Tyrion Lannister kind of, I don't like it. And he does, you know, it does in English. But, you know, anyone with an English accent is, like, superior to any of us. Yeah. I don't know how it works. Why is that? Why is that?
We just think that.
We give them that that credit, you know. We think that they're all, you know, just like a James Mason or something or Julie Andrews. And most of them talk like...
Yeah, there's some really ugly British accents. Like, hello, Governor, how you doing? Like all this crazy Cockney stuff.
And you can't understand it. Like when you see a British movie, like with Sean Bean in it, where he's playing like some drunken boxer. You know, what are they talking about?
Scottish, like the Scottish accents are just, I mean, like true, like hillbilly Scottish, not, you know, the people who live out in the farms. People have no idea.
It's a burr.
And on the next Chicago way will be the Prime Minister of England coming over here just to, you know, talk about our harsh treatment of their accents.
Right.
I really don't care if they don't like our accents. I like theirs. I like the Scottish accent because that's like the Northmen, right? King of the North and all that, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the true lusty yeomen who are honorable and true.
Pretty good.
The Northmen, right? Southerners are like, you know, me, Southern European, and snaky and, I don't know, maybe bisexual or some kind of killer or something.
Mark the tape on that.
Yeah, right. I'm not bisexual. No offense to those who are. And also...
He lived in the 70s, you know.
Yeah, no offense to anyone who wants to wear a pink... How do I call those hats?
Pussy hat.
No. I would rather call them...
That's what they call them.
Female genitalia woolen caps.
Seems a bit wordy, but okay. Huh.
Because I can't use that word in the newspaper.
Sure you can. Well, not the newspaper.
Not me. Would you, Will?
You can, as long as you're quoting the president.
There you go.
Oh.
Well done.
Okay, let's get to it because you want to go. You want to do your whole like, Trump sucks thing.
No. Trump is a master classman of marketing and business. There's no doubt about it. And yes,
he looked like he was having fun at his news conference.
Yeah, the people I brought in to speak for me aren't doing the job and look like they're getting batted around. So I'm going to come out and show how it's done. Press conference. Yes, he did, and it was epic. And I think one of the best analyses of it I saw came from Brett Baer over at Fox News, and says, remember the days when Donald Rumsfeld would hold press conference at the Pentagon, and he would just yell at reporters, or he would scoff at them, he'd be slouched over the lectern, and just despising the people who were asking him questions like they were fools, and you know, just snarky and mean. That's what this was like, but we've never seen that in the White House.
Why not?
Why have we never seen it?
Why not?
Well,
Will Lee?
I don't know.
Why not, Will Lee?
Because there's a certain level of decorum that goes along with the office and all of that. And the president himself kind of alluded to changing, being so presidential, that's a quote, that he would be so presidential by the time he actually took the office, and none of that's happened now. But, by today's press conference, I just had the feeling he walked out. As soon as he walked to the next room, he just nailed it, did everything I wanted to do.
I think that for the most part, reporters are somewhat chicken, okay? We know that. I mean, not that we are all chicken bleep when we're together. You know why reporters don't like getting called out? Harold Washington in Chicago, master of calling them out. He once said to me, "You should be bullwhipped in the public square, you cotton-headed idiot." Because I wrote a profile about him that he didn't like.
That's beautiful.
It is, isn't it?
It is.
Verdoliak would question your sexuality.
It's true. Like Southside guys tend to do.
Jane Byrne would just, glare at you, scream, kick you out of the room. Gene Sawyer was a decent man, and they all walked all over him. Rich Daley was not a decent man, and he would have his little tantrums. You remember when he wanted to stick the gun up Mick Dumke's butt?
How did I miss that one?
Something like Dumke asked, "Is this part of? Do you think your gun control's working?" Which wasn't, because people are getting slaughtered. And he said, "If I stick this gun up your butt and pull the trigger, it'll work. What do you think?" Point being, these guys, if you just sit there and wait for people to delegitimize you, which is what a lot of them are doing, they will. So he fought back, right?
Right.
Whether it's effective or not, he wasn't playing to them. Think he's going to get a good? Is he going to get a fair shot from George Stephanopoulos or Chuck Todd?
Well, he's going to be asked a straight up question, and he won't get anywhere near it. And that's not what people want. They want to see the show, and a lot of the people who
you're avoiding,
want the show.
You're avoiding. Will he get a straight up? Will he get treated fairly by people who've already been out front, either donating to Hillary like Stephanopoulos, or saying stuff like Todd just said, you cannot delegitimize the press. This is terrible.
Right.
It's okay for you to delegitimize him, but he can't do it to you, is what he's saying.
I see what you're saying, but at the same time, he's stretching it. He's changing the whole conversation and pulling it toward him. He's saying,
right,
you should be asking this, which is what
it's
any
a street
president,
fighter does.
What's what any president wants to do. But when he starts, I think he kind of hurts himself a little bit when he starts going on these sort of ego trips. When he goes right back to talking about his election numbers.
That's true.
That can't be verified.
When he goes back to talking about it, my ratings are great, and you have bad ratings. And
the
you're
biggest election,
right,
the biggest electoral college win ever.
Right. That was a whopper. But don't tell me he's not, and he got called on it, but don't tell me he's getting a fair shake from the establishment. Because it's not that they won't give Trump a fair shake. The establishment media organs would not give anyone a fair shake who threatens the establishment by the nature of what they do, which is to defend the status quo. Liberals have complained about this in the past. Now, he's not a, Trump isn't a conservative, but he is an insurgent, and he's complaining. Because the media generally, I think, is a status quo operation.
Well, it's status quo, you know, meaning that everybody wants things to be in a very level sort of normalcy. And sort of any threat to normalcy, people are just, you know, they're frightened. You know, if things aren't going to work the way they're supposed to do, how are they going to work? And that's the answer we're waiting for. It's going to work so great, is his answer.
It's so great, yeah. Well, one thing I want to, I noticed your story on him. You know, we talked about Chicago. I'll tell you, and I used the, some of those quotes. Thank you.
No problem.
Although I watched the news conference myself. Here's what I don't like about what's going on in Chicago, besides the killing. If you say, if Trump says things are bad and they have to be changed, there are people in this town who are all upset because they don't want Trump to get a political victory. Guess what? Those dead babies don't care, do they?
Well, of course not.
So why are you so upset about whether, not you.
Right.
Why are people upset? Well, Trump is going to have a political victory.
It's
what is that? What the hell does that matter?
It's about him. It's not always just about political victory. It's him addressing a topic that he, you know, gets political points for addressing it, for talking about it. But where, you know, at what point do you stop talking about it and start actually acting on it?
I would apply the same thing to many of the commentators.
Absolutely.
You know what? I feel sad. Sad. I know Will does because we covered many of these cases mm-hmm. called the, what do we used to call them? The
imperfect victims.
Imperfect victims. You know, people who were slaughtered who weren't like Hydea Pendleton, but they still had worth, slaughtered. People care.
I'm with you, John. I mean,
and I guarantee you, Rahm cares.
Absolutely.
I couldn't believe that when I read that.
It was the other day. You know, we were talking about this. How Rahm is saying, you know, you got to chill. Democrats have to chill. You got to stop the fighting. Sure. We got to get things done. Things have to start happening. And I know he didn't say that, but that's the idea: is that you got to let this man. And I'm talking about Trump here. Let him come in and let him fix it. If he says he can do it and he's the guy who knows how to build buildings and build economies in the city.
You can't fix it with politics.
No, but you can fix it with
ideal
money
thing,
and programs.
No, you can't because we've seen for 50 years.
No, we've seen for 50 years with liberal Democrats running programs. Mm-hmm. Give this outsider a chance. This is what we've been asking for. A guy who's coming in with fresh eyes,
but
give him a chance.
If you're going to have another welfare, the welfare state destroyed people.
I'm not talking
anybody
about a welfare state.
Anybody who survived
state.
That has left
I'm
and gone to
I'm not talking about
Atlanta.
A welfare state, John. Listen to what I'm saying. I'm talking about economy building. I'm talking about building factories down here, bringing businesses into the city to work and employ people who then can better their lives and better their children's lives.
Who does that threaten? The Democratic
I don't care
Party.
Who. That's what I'm
it
saying. They need to give
Democrats.
It up. Because the city's dying. They can't hold themselves to their ideal world that is liberal. They got to give it up and they got to let this guy come in and do his thing.
But you also have one thing though, and I'm all for people saying bring in fresh ideas, but the problem is, as we saw very recently when when Trump had during his MLK breakfast speech was speaking with that pastor in
so-called
from Ohio, right, the pastor of the megachurch in Ohio who had met with these top Chicago thugs, of which the Chicago Tribune reporting team of Annie Sweeney
and
Jason Meiser actually tracked this guy down,
right.
And that's the crazy.
He backed off, right?
And he backed off. It wasn't really a cohesive plan as was kind of presented in the very beginning. It was a guy who had grown up the hard way saying he was trying to get a bunch of Southside kids to be taken on a tour and to get a good idea of how the government works and all of these things. It wasn't a plan to completely, you know, eradicate crime and violence. It was just one guy's idea being stretched at a public place. And so that's the question is, does Trump know?
You want to do something? You go back in time. What you do is you have Minister Farrakhan convene a meeting. I'm just hypothetically speaking. And there's like the lords of the thugs of all the different sides go because they would least trust that he wouldn't, you know, he could provide security. And you have like a couple of the guys from Grand Avenue, Ohio and Damon, Chinatown, right?
Right.
Some of the mafia guys. And you sit down and you say, this is yours, this is yours, this is yours, this is yours. It's over now. Stop killing. But all these things are broke, these cliques are broken up now, so that none of that would ever work.
And it's also this, the somewhat troubling thing when this pastor was being mocked. It was just because the people who, you know, followed this all just kind of saw, it's like, how can an older person have wield control over it? This isn't the old days. This isn't a Jeff Ford or Larry Hoover or
how's a young guy
going
to.
And you're saying he was being mocked by people on the streets. I mean, not
who's mocked by the left.
He was mocked by people who.
That's my point.
BLM.
No, but yeah,
kids like that and the left, right?
Well, but the left is. I mean, they're going to mock everybody. He deserved mocking. But the people who he was talking about being able to bring together, if those are the people that are mocking him, I mean, that's right there shows that this guy is out of touch. He was just talking out of his ass.
Well, who has control now? That's the whole question that everyone wants to say, and you don't. You have a bunch of like little sets of maybe 10, 15 people at the most fighting against people of the same size.
There's a problem with that. I've been thinking about that because Will and I have been operating under that, right? Because of the homicides that we cover. Here's one thing, Will. That may be true, but they're all selling the same dope.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So somebody's getting it to them.
Right.
It's not just falling out of the sky.
Oh, certainly not.
Right? So that's where you go. If you want to be serious about it,
yep. But that's big money.
Who's got that?
But that's big money.
And if you start asking questions like that, Will, you might end up with your head cut off, wrapped up in Visqueen in a garage in Kildare where was it?
Was it the 50s in Kildare, I believe?
Right by Midway Airport.
And might. No.
that's the Chicago way.
The gang wars in Chicago come with babies being slaughtered every day, and the politicians wag their fingers, and commentators are telling everybody they don't care enough or don't feel enough, and we all have to do something and care. Guess what? People care. You care. I care. Everybody cares when you see a story about a baby being killed. Emotion doesn't matter when people are being slaughtered. You want emotion? Go cry yourself a river. I've been doing this too long. People are being killed, babies are dying, and what I don't think we need are more tears and finger wagging from people who've never walked a crime scene. What we need is something concrete. What we need is answers and policy. One idea we've been talking about here on the Chicago Way for months, first with Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, I now call the Judicial Accountability Act. It's about putting pressure on judges to keep convicted felons who insist on illegally carrying guns behind bars. And now comes another idea. Bob Mylan, longtime prosecutor on both the county and the federal levels, brings it here. Is it about hugs? No. It's about troops and a massive amount of cops and federal police. It's about blockading entrances and exits to Chicago's killing fields. You could argue that if something drastic isn't done, the slaughter will only get worse as the temperature rises. So let's welcome Bob Mylan to the Chicago Way. I'm tired of talking about emotion. Emotion doesn't do anything to stop the gang wars in the city. And I think that we have to start calling things what they are. To me, it's gang wars. That's why people are getting killed, why the babies are getting shot. Tell me about yourself. Tell me what's going on. What do you think of all this?
Sure. I've lived in this, like you, I've lived in Chicago or the suburbs my entire life. Love the city. I think it's the greatest city in the world. But we're dealing with the most dire problem we've ever dealt with, and that is the gang shootings and homicides that are occurring in Chicago. And this just didn't start yesterday or 2016 or 15. This has been going on for decades, and we haven't had the political will to deal with it the way it should be dealt with. And now it's the numbers are outrageous, and all we hear is rhetoric. And so myself and a group of other former law enforcement officers, my friend Jim Smith from the U.S. Marshals and others, have put together a plan calling for the National Guard to be brought in. And it doesn't mean militarizing our city or tanks going down State Street. It's called to protect the law-abiding citizens of the West and South sides from the gang shootings, and to treat people, law-abiding citizens, with respect, make sure they're protected, and let the gang members know that if they draw a gun in those areas, they're either going to be arrested on site or be met with deadly force. This has to stop.
Look, when you say bring in the National Guard, people have this feeling of, one, a city out of control, and two, like the redcoats going, knocking down the door of your home with their boots. Is that how you see this happening?
No. And the fact of the matter is, there are huge segments of the city that are out of control. The areas in the west side we're talking about are vast, and the areas in the south side that we're talking about are very vast. And the number of gang members is estimated at anywhere from 70,000 active gang members in Chicago to as high as 150,000. There's no way the Chicago Police Department can keep up with this. There's just not enough.
So talk to me, what about the more specifics, right, Will? Don't you want to, how does the plan work?
So here's how the plan works. We bring in, we call in a minimum of 4,000 National Guardsmen. I'd rather see 8,000 to come in and take over and patrol the south and west sides. And the other thing they have to deal with is the geography. So for instance, let me give you an example. In Austin, there's about 164 entrances and exits in Austin. Through alleys and streets.
Austin on the west side of Chicago. On the west of Austin, there's a place called Oak Park.
Right.
What Oak Park did, and they're all, I call it the People's Republic of Oak Park because it's so liberal, but what they did is they put up barriers. They blocked streets. They did, the liberals, to prevent access into Oak Park.
And who can blame them? I mean, who wants the gangster disciples and the vice lords going into Oak Park and killing people? So that's exactly what I'm calling for. So between 7 at night and 7 in the morning, we would block off 70 of those entrances, of the 162 entrances into Austin. And 90 would be left open. All 90 would be patrolled by National Guardsmen. There'd be law enforcement cameras there. And the area inside the perimeter would be saturated with Chicago Police, National Guardsmen, Cook County Sheriffs, Illinois State Police. We do the same on the Eisenhower, the Stevenson, and the Dan Ryan. Do the same thing on the south side. Let me give you Englewood, for example. Englewood has 151 entrances and exits.
Where are you defining Englewood from? Because
I'm defining it a little
like
broader
district?
Than it. No. I'm talking about Englewood, the greater Englewood. So Englewood and West Englewood, which would go roughly from State on the east all the way to Western Avenue. It's a little farther than Englewood. From 55th Street on the north, all the way to 79th Street, even though Englewood stops at 75th, I'd go all the way to 79th.
So what about, like, if you care about the people living at 5224 South Peoria, where
I'm giving you examples.
Right,
I'm saying
right.
We go wider than this.
Okay.
But this is just so people can understand how specific we're getting.
Right.
I would go, I mean, I think the National Guard should go all the way to 119th Street, 111th, 95th. It should go farther than just Austin on the west side. But these are examples. And, again, instead of 151 entrances and exits at nighttime, you make it 90, and all of them are guarded by National Guardsmen. The rest of them are shut down, just as Oak Park did, from 7 at night till 4 in the morning, and then you can patrol it. There will be no more drive-by shootings in those areas while that takes place because they can't get away. There won't be a single open-air drug market in those areas. And guess what? The shootings will plummet. I believe that if you did this for an 8-month period in our city, there'd be less than 800 shootings and less than 200 homicides. I believe that.
I would almost certainly agree with you there. I think the problem is, though, is that if you live in that area, it would feel like, I can only imagine, and this is just my gut reaction, hearing about it, I haven't really molded over and thought about how it would go, but I would just think, what if you live in this area and you see what I'm imagining would be National Guard, trucks full of National Guardsmen driving back and forth? Wouldn't that feel like you lost? You know, like us, you know, who've lived in Auburn, Gresham, you know, if you can't go through your own neighborhood without seeing guardsmen, isn't that just recognition that we've lost doing it the old-fashioned policing way?
We have lost, and that's the problem. If I didn't think we did, I wouldn't be calling for this. I think this is what I think the people would, how they'd feel, law-abiding citizens. They'd be like, we can sit on our porches at nighttime and not get killed. Our kids can go to the park and play basketball and not get shot. 12-year-old girls, 11-year-old girls, 2-year-old boys aren't going to get killed anymore. That's how I think they'll take it. The people that will be irate about this are the gangbangers because the party's over. There's no way for them to make money in those neighborhoods. There's no way for them to get away with drive-bys. The party's over, and enough is enough.
Well, what would happen to the political reaction would be, if I'm on the left of center, I would want to make the police or the National Guard seemed like occupying forces, and I would have to rally the community, right? And maybe some of those would be gangbangers supported, like a lot of our politics are, right? You're ready for that, too, right?
I'm ready for it because the rebuttal's easy, okay? Look, I'm a guy who lives up in the north suburbs. My kids are safe as can be. I grew up in Beverly where I was never worried about getting shot, okay? I'm not here for my own people. I'm here to help these poor people who are poverty stricken and living in rough places to protect them. And so, anybody, no matter whether you're a liberal, conservative, I don't care what you call yourself, I'm not here to fight with anybody. I'm here to save lives. And it's how you package it. So when you start using words like occupy or militarize or tanks rolling down the street, you package it that way, you're going to get a lot of pushback. The way this thing should be packaged is protection, 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 and the National Guardsmen should be out there to respect the law-abiding people that live there.
They're not trained as police officers. The National Guard or military is not trained to be police officers. Military is trained to break, kill people and break stuff. Well, that's what they're trained for.
Or protect people. And okay. I would disagree that they're just trained to kill people. No, they're not law enforcement, nor would they be brought in for that reason. This is a clear message. And the message is to the gangbangers, you're either going to be apprehended on site or you're going to meet deadly force if you come out with a gun in these neighborhoods and you're going to shoot somebody. It's just, we're not going to put up with it. To the other people, it's going to be, you're going to get to church safely, you can sit on your porch safely, you can go to the park safely, and you can enjoy your neighborhoods the way the rest of us do.
How do you see patrolling going as far as the National Guardsmen?
So the way I would do it is, again, these intersections that we could decide to patrol at nighttime, they'd be right there, armed National Guardsmen, there'd be law enforcement cameras there. I think it's 2017, we should be using drones. Drones would be filming everything that goes on. And then inside these neighborhoods, you would combine Chicago Police, National Guardsmen, Cook County Sheriffs, federal agents if available, and to assist with this. There's a second part to this plan that I haven't mentioned, and that is we need to get everybody at the table, including ATF, U.S. Marshals, FBI, Cook County Sheriffs, Illinois State Police, to do two things. Saturate these areas like I'm just talking about because they're so vast. But secondly, to start making gun arrests and bringing gun prosecutions to federal court. That's a big part of this. So if we do all of this together, this crisis will be substantially eliminated.
One of the reasons why I wanted you on is because I'm tired of people emotional responses to this, something that Will Lee, when he used to work with me, would always caution me about. Like, you know, your emotion's great, but what's the solution? My argument for the last couple weeks has been, we need better prosecution of gun crimes, particularly unlawful use of weapons by a felon. Where's that? You're a former prosecutor. How long did you spend with the state's attorneys?
I was there 23 years, and then I was a U.S. attorney following that. First of all, without the National Guard segment, this isn't going to work. Right? You're not going to get to the numbers you want. The prosecutions of the gun cases is a piece of this. A lot of people I've been hearing recently, all they do is point at the gun issue, right? Guns, guns, guns. We do have some of the strictest gun laws in the nation.
Bob, there's more guns in the suburbs than in the city because people have more money to buy guns. And guess what? They're not slaughtering each other.
Right.
Make that what you want to call it racial or whatever you want to call me. I'm just looking at numbers.
Right. But here's something I want to point out about the gun laws in Illinois, about people saying we need to make them stricter. If you shoot an individual in Illinois with a handgun, the minimum sentence for that attempt murder, the minimum is 31 years in prison with 85% serving. Okay? That's the minimum, 31 to life.
Shooting.
If you shoot and kill them, it's first-degree murder. The minimum sentence is 45 to life, no day-for-day good time, 100% of the sentence. So if gangbangers aren't afraid of pulling the guns out and blasting away in a street corner and either wounding or killing somebody, why would they be afraid of a 3-year sentence, a 5-year sentence, a 7-year sentence? The logic is ridiculous. They're not afraid of it. What they are afraid of, and I know this from listening to dozens of wiretaps in my career, and interviewing dozens of gangbangers in my career, is they're terrified of immediate ramifications, which means being apprehended at the scene or shot at the scene, which is why saturating these areas will work. Let me give you an example. Last November 12th, the city of Chicago, the Chicago Police Department, did a saturation plan in the three worst Chicago police districts at the time, Auburn, Gresham, and Ogden. And what they did is they brought in the FBI, the Illinois State Police, Cook County Sheriffs, and they had Chicago police officers working overtime around the clock in those three areas. Guess how many people were shot November 12th through November 14th, 2016, in those three districts? One. It works, okay? Unfortunately, they don't have the manpower to keep it going. So to do it for one weekend and then high-five each other is crazy. Let's do it right, and let's put an end to it.
So before we get into the cost of this, let's say you have two-thirds of the access entrances and exits of Englewood. Greater Englewood, blocked. Then you have those others that are open. So you have to have troops blocking them, and you have others open. At the open entranceways and exit ways, don't you need police officers there?
That's the plan. That's what I meant.
The
ones that are closed don't need to be guarded. They're going to be closed with physical, like you described Oak Park, where you bring in.
Oh, you put cement blockades.
Yeah, overnight, you know, so you bring them in overnight, and you can pull them away in the morning. But at the 90 entrances and exits would be the National Guardsmen and the police guarding it with drones and law enforcement cameras, and that's exactly how you do it.
What would they do? Have a campaign like, we're just looking in your car, sir, to make sure your seatbelt is on?
If they see bad activity, sure. But here's
and
more
what's
importantly.
What's your PC probable cause on that?
You're not stopping people. What you're doing is if you get a radio call saying that a 1998 Buick, red Buick, four-door just lit up the corner so-and-so and it's heading this way, they're not going to get out. Okay, they can't get out. That's what it's all about. I want to talk about costs since you talked about this. It's very expensive to do this, right? I'm assuming it would be the Federal National Guard since local authorities have not advocated for this. So let's say we brought in the president.
You mean the Army?
No, the National Guard. So the president has the authority.
Would federalize the Illinois National
Guard. Right,
would
federalize the Illinois National Guard.
That means he'd pay for it.
Right. So let's just say he did that.
Right.
It would be very expensive for the federal government. But to me, it's worth it.
How much?
It would be millions and millions of dollars, but you'd be saving thousands and thousands of lives, right? But look what the benefits would be for Cook County and Chicago. University of Chicago and Cook County Hospital and Christ Hospital wouldn't be inundated with all these shooting victims that they're inundated with right now. The jail would actually be less populated because you wouldn't be having to make so many arrests for all these shootings. The Chicago police have a 20% clearance rate going right now. They could go back and start working on their old cases instead of having new ones pile up in front of them. There'd be all kinds of benefits that people don't even think about. There's one other benefit. There's a bunch of neighborhoods in this city, like Lakeview and Beverly and Edison Park and other neighborhoods, Lincoln Park, that are complaining that they're not getting any police service because the police are all looking at the west side and the south side. If you did what I'm talking about, Chicago police could properly patrol those areas. I mean, there's an area in Lakeview that hired their own security company in a 3 or 4 block area just to patrol their homes.
I work in that area.
Yeah, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's all kinds of benefits that would stem from this.
What is the Will Lee, what would be the political reaction? Okay, say Bob Mylon brings this to Rahm Emanuel. What do you think the mayor would say?
I think it would be one of his patented sort of quick responses, something like that. Again, the mayor's trying to showcase this as a tourist spot. You know, this is the number 3 city, but this is, you know, we're better than the other first two. You can't do that if you have guardsmen driving around and people driving from Hyde Park to, you know, downtown.
The problem is, we're going to have this weekend. People are listening to this on Monday,
right?
But I came to work on a Friday with a sweater and a T-shirt. Okay, mm-hmm. And by the weekend, it's going to be warmer. I'm thinking about barbecuing, Jeff Carlin.
Record highs.
My sons are home, right, from college, so record highs. Now, it's not a smart thing to always say it's going to be a hot summer. I've heard it a million times, but generally, when weather goes up in the temperatures go up in a violent winter, generally we have problems.
Yeah, and just let's look at recent history. It's not like we didn't know this wasn't coming. Okay, you look at 4th of July 2015. Okay, there was almost 80 people shot that weekend. Okay, 4th of July weekend. So we saw it coming. Now let's go to January 2016, the bloodiest January in 20 years. February 2016, bloodiest February in 20 years. March, the same thing. We saw this coming. And you know what? No plan. Here we are in 2017. We are at record numbers to pass 2016. No plan. I have a plan. Now, maybe it's not the best, and I'm open to listening to other plans. But my plan's going to stop it, okay? And if somebody has a better one, I'm in. But this has to stop.
The 3 babies were killed this week, and everyone gets all emotional. And they talk about, oh, you don't care, or we don't care. Or you're not we're all sleeping and those children are dead. And I'm wondering, where's the real answer? So what other answers are there out there?
That's the only one I have. I mean,
have you heard any others?
No, I haven't heard any. And I want to emphasize something. So my plan is immediate. All right, how do we deal with it right now? Okay, I'm well aware that there's this other long-term things that have to be dealt with that I'm not an expert at.
Jobs and education?
Yeah, unemployment, extreme poverty, education, parenting, broken families that are going on in these neighborhoods. I get that, and I'm all for people working on that. The problem is that's not going to save a life in 2017, 18, or 19. They should get on it right now. But for us to sit here in 2017 in February and shrug our shoulders and say, let's work on the education and unemployment, you know, the bottom line is gangster disciples aren't standing in line with their resumes. They're not tuning them up to get a job. That's not happening. Okay, they're out there lighting up the streets, and they're slinging dope, and they're causing havoc. So I'd like to do both, but we got to deal with this one immediately to save lives in 2017 and 18. There has to be a plan.
Will?
I was going to ask, I'm sorry, one second. I had an idea. I had a question.
I've got a question for you, Bob.
I got it. So do you have any lines in the Trump administration or anything? Any way to fly this idea higher, you know, so that you can kind of get out of the woods here?
I've been talking to a lot of people, you know, locally, you know, and nationally. But I want to do it in a respectful way, okay? I don't think finger-pointing is the way to do it. So it's easy to come on here and start ripping on elected officials and this and that.
For the record, you have not ripped on any elected officials.
No.
That's not what this is about.
Right. I think you lose traction and credibility if you do that. I'd like to help, and I'd meet with anybody, the mayor, the governor. I'd meet with anybody from the White House to help with this. And let me stress this. If somebody has a better plan than mine, fine, let's do it, okay? But, I've been talking to a lot of people here locally and nationally, and a lot of people agree. I hope we do something fast.
Now, the second part of the plan, if you couldn't use the National Guard, would be to do what?
Well,
if the president would not federalize the Guard and the— Governor Rauner won't do it, and the mayor won't do it.
All right, the plan B then, I think the best plan B would be to bring in hundreds of federal agents. So you'd bring in hundreds of FBI, ATF, U.S. Marshals. You join with the Cook County Sheriff's Police, the Illinois State Police, and the Chicago Police, and you inundate these same areas as much as possible in the same kind of fashion. That way you don't have—
Windbreakers with the yellow lettering on the back, right? Some law enforcement.
Right. There's, you know, for some reason, people may be more comfortable with those people than they would be the National Guard, and I don't really understand why, but that would be plan B. It'd have to be big, though. I mean, I'm talking thousands of agents coming in here to do it, but that would be what I'd recommend.
I'm very interested in seeing how this is going to fly. I'm going to write about this next week. How do you think it would fly?
Well, locally, I think we've discussed that, but I think
no, seriously, locally, how would it fly?
Locally, I would think it would be a shriek of terror off the very beginning, just—
Why?
because of the visual aspect.
Knee jerk,
absolutely
okay.
Knee jerk.
But okay, after the knee jerk is done, I know I can imagine people doing their typical knee jerk BS. Mm-hmm. After that's over, because now they're calling for, let's do something. Right. You must do something. Let's do— Right? So then what?
But that doesn't mean that there would be no people who would support it after a while, after really mulling it over, because you have people who live in certain neighborhoods who are saying, let's do it. Let's, you know, whenever someone gets killed, let's do it right away.
I know people in those neighborhoods who are demanding it.
Right, absolutely. Well, some would.
And some aren't.
Right, exactly. But I think there would be definitely a line would be drawn, and you would start to see the armies amass on both sides for this type of thing. Because right now it's about stopping it. And I do agree with what Bob said, is that there are no plans coming up for these holidays. Just kind of, you know, overtime. That's the only plan.
Let's say there's no plan. Because of the politics being what they are, nobody wants to tip the boat as we're going into election cycles. If there's no plan, what's going to happen in the south and west sides that we've been writing about for years? What happens, Bob Milan?
If there's no plan, it'll be the bloodiest year we've ever had. We're already headed that way. It's going to be terrible. So you're going to see screaming mothers on the news every night talking about their kid that got killed. You're going to see a ton of gangbangers getting killed and wounded. You're going to see
columnists saying, why don't you care?
Yep. You're going to see the south and west sides out of control and a whole bunch of people shrugging their shoulders, and that's what you're going to see.
One thing, as a longtime prosecutor, the gangs, you know that the gangs have been broken up so that there's no big boss like back when we were kids, Bob. There was Shorty Freeman on the south side, and before that, David Barksdale and Larry Hoover, and on the west side, the professor, Willie Lloyd, professor at DePaul, by the way, and all that broke up, right? The feds broke those guys up, just like they broke the outfit. So now you have all these little cliques, and that's what everyone says. Little cliques, they're little cliques, but the dope is the same, right? So how do you, I mean, if the dope is the same, it's not coming in, nobody, it's coming in from the same spot or same two or three places. Isn't that an avenue to attack it on?
Yeah, and if that's why I'm saying, if you do what I'm talking about, there will be no open-air drug markets. If the three of us got in a car right now and we went down to the south side, or I took you out to the west side, you'd see open-air drug markets. I'd point them out to you, right? There's a lot of them.
They've been there.
Right.
They're always there. And 15. Why, come on, man.
Why? And you know, the way it works is there's a vacant building and there's a guy in the first floor window and he hands it out to the shorties and they go and deliver it and they bring the money back or they keep it underneath.
Do you remember on 58th Street?
Yeah.
When that big white wall and the red lettering on that white wall, Cain and Abel on 58th and Calumet. Okay?
Yeah.
And it was there for 20 years.
Right.
It was like a bazaar of drugs. Everyone knew to go there. And the coppers kind of, it was left to be there so it wouldn't be on the park closer to the University of Chicago.
Right.
And that was part of the deal, I think. Right?
Right. You know, I agree with Will's assessment as to what the original reaction of this would be. There'd be a lot of knee jerk and all that. But what will happen is once they see that it works, once they see lives are being saved, once they see the shootings are down dramatically, you know, the law-abiding people would be very happy.
Hey, Bob, I imagine one of the big people standing in the way of making this a reality would be a group like the, you know, ACLU, people who would talk about the rights of the people who live there and the freedom to not live in what you call a police state. What would be your tone or your candor with them to try to turn that and say, listen, this is people are going to save lives. How do we get there?
You know, that should be enough logic. I mean, so here's what I would say to them. What do we have right now? You have absolute chaos. You got kids getting killed. You got carnage. We had, you know, 4,350 people shot last year, 762 killed. The numbers are actually higher than that. And so what I'm proposing is we saturate the areas so that that doesn't happen again. What's their argument? And the other thing is, I'm not talking about kicking in doors or tanks going down the street. I'm talking about patrolling. Saturated patrols in the areas where we know this is going to happen. Let me say something. The way I look at this, I grew up in Beverly. Again, safe as could be, raised my kids in the north suburbs. If you told the residents of Beverly today, or Edison Park, or the North Shore, that in two weekends from now, you were going to have 14 separate shootings in your neighborhood with 6 dead, do you think they'd stand by and let this happen? They'd build a moat before they let it happen. They'd call for the National Guard, the Navy SEALs. They would never allow this to happen. But this happens every single week in the neighborhoods I'm talking about, and because they're black and they're poor, everybody just shrugs their shoulders and whispers, it's the west side that happens, it's the south side that happens. Well, if we're one Chicago, if we're really one Chicago, we're not going to put up with it anymore.
Should be interesting. I'll tell you one thing. Last week, there was a hit on Lakeshore Drive on Fullerton. And it's a funny thing about news and politics, guys, and we all know it. The new reporters doing the stand-up at 79th and Cottage, right? That's one kind of story. But then you have a hit on Lakeshore Drive and a whole Lakeshore Drive shut down, right, during rush hour. That's a different kind of story. If that hit had taken place instead of 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, if it had taken place at 8 o'clock in the morning, 9, and you have, let's say, some doctor on the way to do surgery at Northwestern Hospital, getting, whacked out right there, or mommies with their kids, or right, commuters, suburbanites, whatever, rich people, rich white people. They start getting shot, a different deal. And shootings taking place on the expressways right now. Not the second, but I mean more than I've ever seen before. So does that kind of, the institutional racism that I see in the media and in politics is what you're talking about. It's only a West Side thing. It's a South Side thing. Does that violence have to spread out in order to wake people up that we're all together on?
Well, it shouldn't have to, but I think your point's well taken. That look, there's a whole lot of us that live in these very nice neighborhoods,
yeah.
and we're, you know, we're upper middle class, and you know, we have these great lives, and it's easy to say their problem, not mine. You know, and that it, but it shouldn't be that way. We should all be thinking like this, like, hey, let's solve this. We're one city, you know, but for the grace of God, I could have been born into one of those families on, you know, in Englewood or Austin, you know, just for the flip.
I was born in Englewood.
Yeah, for the flip of a coin, I could have been, it could be me. And that's how we should be looking at it. Now, are there a whole bunch of people that don't care because, you know, yeah, their lives are safe and this is the west side and the south side? Of course there is, but it shouldn't be that way.
I want to thank you very much for coming in, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
We have a lot to talk about on this. I'll be writing about it this week. And also with us, Will Lee, my buddy. Thank you for being here, Will Lee, Tribune columnist and reporter. Jeff Carlin, WGN Radio, and me, John Cass, your mild-mannered columnist. This has been the Chicago Way. We'll talk to you next week, and I hope Betty forgives me for ruining Valentine's Day.